Hi, this is Diego Rivera from Quebrada del Chucao in Villarrica, Chile, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 40. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly trip into Ciderville, with chats with cider makers and enthusiasts from around the world. And this week, we are headed down south of the equator into the country of Chile in Latin America. This long coastal country is rich with fruits and vintners and cider makers. Well, I have a couple things I'd like to talk about before we get into the chat. And the first one is just on the topic of real cider. So I hope that this will kind of, you know, get a little bit of a conversation going. And maybe we'll kick that off at the Cider Chat Facebook page to continue. Or you could leave a SpeakPipe voicemail at ciderchat.com and I'll put you right on this podcast and you could let your own insight into this topic go. So real cider, this is a term that gets put out there. We've heard a number of cider makers on this podcast talking about that. And there is one side of the camp that really feels strongly that cider should be nothing but apples. And that's it, period. And certainly in France, that's all that the government allows. And then you have the UK, where there is folks who are just making cider with just apples. And they're making it really, really well. So I think that's awesome. Folks firmly believe that, and that's how they want to make that. Hot damn, that's what they should do. My experience, since I've been involved in cider making, and that's been for quite a long time, and even before my time, what my ancestors taught me and the stories I know of my area, and I am based in the part of Ciderville that is called the United States, folks have been adding stuff to cider since the beginning of time in this country. Back in the day, they had a barrel, and if all they had was apple juice, that's all they put in it. But they'd also sometimes add a little bit of spirits, some moonshine, if you will, a little bit of whiskey, a little bit of bourbon. The sky's the limit on that. New England cider, the recipe calls for raisins and adding sugar or brown sugar. Sometimes they let it just go wild ferment with the yeast. The truth is that cider, as I know it, and how I've been brought up with it, is that anything goes. When I've taught cider making, I didn't know anything other than, dang, let's try what we can and see what the apple will welcome and how it will blend with that particular blend of cider that I'm making. So I would teach it by throwing in a banana. We'd throw in ginger. We'd throw in blueberries right there on the spot. And maybe we'd add sugar or maybe we'd add honey. We knew that to be cider. And that is a little bit what we see here in the U.S. When folks are making cider here, they're adding pineapple. They're adding coffee, raspberries, other fruits, so many, many different things. And that is what we see as real cider. Now, I will say that I could tell the difference when one adds actual blueberries to the apple juice and then ferment it versus a blueberry flavoring. I don't like beers like that either. I could tell immediately when a brewer adds a flavored fruit to their beer versus a real fruit. There'll always be those types of ciders and those types of beers. As we get deeper and deeper into cider, we're going to be able to differentiate that. And there's going to be different drinkers who like that. I don't hold that against anyone. If that's what you like, well, good for you. That's your prerogative, and that's the beauty of cider. But I don't really buy into the fact that folks in different parts of Ciderville in the world, if they're making it one way, that folks in other parts say that isn't real cider. Well, maybe not for your neck of the woods, but in their neck of the woods, it is. And that is just the way it's going to roll. We saw the same parallel universe happen a number of years ago in the craft beer industry. When initially, I mean, you go back to 1516, there was the German purity law, the Reinheitsgebot, and back then, all you could have was water, hops, and barley, period. Nothing else. It was so strict. And even more recently, there has been some changes. But, you know, some folks have said in Germany that the Bavarian brewers, I want to say, basically said, you know, it's really holding back our ability to grow our market as the American craft brewers took off and now have beers with, you know, pumpkin ales. There are blueberry beers, watermelon beers. There is stouts made that had like creme brulee in it, coffee, all kinds of stuff. Milk stout has lactose in it. Crazy, crazy stuff. And the consumers love it. And in turn, the brewers get to experiment and keep that tradition of brewing evolving. The same is true with American cider makers. They are evolving and pushing the envelope. And we're all better for that. Because what do we get out of that? We find out that, you know, dang, ginger tastes really good with apple that is fermented. It's a nice marriage of the two. I'll also say, though, I could tell the difference when somebody puts in real blueberries versus a flavor additive. The same thing with beer. I would never really reach for a beer that's made with a flavoring versus a real product such as the fruit itself. I have a local brewery here that uses like 1,000 pounds of local raspberries, and I'll give them a shout out. That's Berkshire Brewing in South Deerfield, Massachusetts. And you could taste that difference. It's absolutely delicious. One year I helped them make it, and I was just pouring in the raspberries and in that product. They make it every year for like the Valentine's Day season, a delicious beer indeed. But that is made with real fruit, and we are seeing that all over the map in my part of Ciderville, from coast to coast, and all the 49th state and the outward territories are grooving on what they could do with their craft. For the fermenters and the cider makers, the same thing's happening. And this will just kick cider into the outer planetary zone and keep the consumers who are constantly on the demand for new styles happy and content. I think it's a good thing. I'd be kind of curious what you think too. Should we have fortified cider? Whether that's a spirit or should we be having different adjuncts in it? What do you think? Is it real cider? Or not? Me? I think it is, as long as you're using a good quality ingredients. Because you know what? I love it all. Speaking of loving it all, two people took the time to leave a review and rating. The first one was from a dude. And dude gave Cider Chat a 4-star rating.
Going down.
Kind of sad, dude, because I wish you would have just written to me first and given me some of this info instead of putting it on iTunes. I mean, I just want to do that. You know, if you're a cider maker and I'm not digging what you like, I'm not going to write that out there. I don't do reviews and ratings that way. It's just not my style. If I don't have anything good to say about it, well, my mama taught me don't say anything at all, or at least speak to the person in private. Anyways, dude, let me say what you wrote. The title says it all. Rhea does a great job with her interviews and content. Thank you very much. However, the music playing in the background during the interviews is distracting at best and can at times really detract from the interview. The use of repetitive samples going up, coupled with the background music, reminds me of a bad trance album. More focus on content and less on overproducing the show would really make it shine. Well, thank you. Does that mean that you would give me a 5-star rating? Because, you know, I'm working my arse here and trying to do the best I can to keep it exciting. Then I got a second one here from Bin Lin, a China shop. And this is a 5-star review and rating. Thank you very much. And the title says, a wide angle perspective on the cider industry. Bin Lin, a China shop, writes, I've been listening to Cider Chat on the road between Gulip and our cider apple test orchard in Simcoe. As a graduate student working on cider apples, I found that the perspective of growers and others involved in making and selling cider are invaluable. What I love most about Cider Chat is that Rhea talks to people from all types of background and experience in cider, from big names who have been in cider for decades to people who are just starting, and from growers to marketers. This is an exciting time to be in the cider industry, and Cider Chat is a great way to get acquainted with it. I'm only about 2/3 of the way through the chats at the moment, but it's great to hear from the industry people that I already know and industry people I'd like to meet. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you. You made my day, Bin Lin, a China shop, for that, giving some really good insight. And I think this episode, maybe we'll keep you pushing forward. I don't know if you've gotten through them all yet, but we'll be going on some good travels ahead for your ride. Thanks both of you folks for leaving those reviews. And even if it's hard stuff, I like to hear it. It'd be a little bit nicer to hear that on an email, because 4 stars, they really hurt the standing of this podcast. You wouldn't think so, but they do. So if any of you out there have a little bit of time to make it a 5-star, that would be awesome. Leave a review and rating so that Cider Chat could come back out of the swamps from that one little hit. Even though Dude did make a good point. And I'm taking it to heart. Actually, there's not going to be any music with this one because Diego Rivera, his language is not native English. And he did an amazing job speaking to me, because you don't even want to hear my Spanish, the little bit that I have. So I wanted you to be able to hear every little piece of that. And so in this way, I've chosen not to do that music too much. So I think Dude will be very happy with that. And I think you will be happy too. We are going deep down into southern Chile and speaking with, really, he's like the head cider maker. And this is a family cidery, in that his uncle, the Narwold family, and his uncle and his cousin, you know, they're all part of this. His sister made the artwork for the label of the bottle. And it is a cool scene. And even more so, to be able to talk about what's happening in Chile is amazing. Europeans brought over apples there. There's some old apple trees. And if that isn't getting your ears kind of perking up and saying, what? What's that? Yeah, it's happening down there. And we know that the tradition of winemaking, what they've been able to do on the world, is outstanding. There's a lot of organic, biodynamic wines. And this little cidery that we're talking about today in the area of Vicari in Chile is also doing a very kind of pure, if you will, apple production. They're not certified organic, but they're not also really fertilizing or doing anything to the apples in that way, because the apples trees are so old. We do talk a bit about that, Diego and I. So what do you think? So should we get into this chat? It's a good one. It's a long one. It's very informative. I'm really, really excited to have this opportunity. So how about if you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Diego Rivera of the cidery known as Quebrada de Chicagua in Vicari, Chile. Diego, I wanted to ask you the name of the cidery. I'm going to attempt to do this. Quebrada del Chuca? Is that correct? Or can you pronounce that for me and help me out a little bit?
Quebrada?
Quebrada.
First word?
Yeah, quebrada.
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 Yes, that quebrada means like water creek. You know, it's like this, like, normally we call quebradas to the creeks that you find in every countryside.
And del Chuca?
And the Chucao.
Chucao.
Chucao, it's a very small bird, very tiny bird that lives, and the Quebrada del Chucao is the creek from this little bird that goes through the middle of the place where we have our cellar. And the Chucao is a very small bird that you always listen to it. It lives on the forest floor, and it's very rare because you don't see it very much. It's always hidden in the woods, and it has a very beautiful singing.
Okay, is that what we would see on the label for your bottles? Because there is a little bird there.
Yes, that's the bird just stepping over the or on the hand with the apple. That's mm-hmm. the little bird. It's a jumping bird. It doesn't fly really, so it moves jumping on the forests.
Right. And did you have that name because the cider is unique and rare? Or is there another reason that that's the name of the cidery?
No, it's because it's very, it's what at the end, it's very central to the place where we are, you know. The water creek, like, kind of cuts the farm in two halves, and it's full of, like, native woods and native trees. And you listen to the chucao all day singing. It has a beautiful singing, like... It makes like a sound like that, and you can hear it from very far away. You don't need to be inside the water creek to hear it. And it's very amazing because I've only seen it once, the bird, and it's very, very tiny, but very beautiful and colorful.
It's a beautiful label, too, that you have there. It feels a little abstract in the way with the hand coming out, just to kind of let the listeners know, it's this hand coming out and holding an apple that's sliced in half, and then the bird is sitting right at the wrist facing the apple.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, very beautiful label. It was illustrated by my sister. She's a very talented young girl, and she's been illustrating for many, many other projects, and it took a good time to develop, but we're very happy with it, and a lot of people love it just by seeing it, you know?
Well, let's give her a shout out. What is her name?
Her name is Luisa Rivera, and now she's currently living in London, UK, and she's working over there with a lot of very nice, interesting illustration projects.
Perfect. Now, this cidery, this is a family affair, from what I gather. Is it land owned by the family? Are you bringing this the apples in from a local orchard to your site? How is that set up?
Yeah, we've set it as a family business. We started in 2012 with my uncle and a cousin. They live in the property. Now also my mother is involved in the business, and we are aiming to keeping it familiar and run it as a family project. And well, the property, it's a like 100 acres farm that where my uncle lives, and we built a small cellar 5 years ago, and there are a couple of very old trees in the property, but most of our apples are brought from other orchards that are like, I would say, 10-minute drive out of the property, and it's quite old orchards, probably more than 60-year-old orchards, and some of them could be even older. And we work with some small producers that grow the fruit for us. Normally, we have 4 or 5 long-term agreements that are not like proper contracts, but we have an agreement to buy all their apples every year. So for them, it's an interesting solution to what they grow, because the orchards are quite old and they don't want to cut them off, but sometimes they don't know what to exactly do with their apples. So we give them a very good result. So we're quite happy to be working together.
you're using organic apples from what I could see. Is that true, like predominantly all organic, or is it a bit of a mix?
Yes, they're not certified organics, and we're not thinking so far to get into a certification program, but the orchards are completely organic. They sometimes just put some like sheep and other animals so they can keep the grass very low, but it's non-irrigated. They don't apply any fertilizers. They just prune a little bit every year, and the production gets very tiny productions, though. Like we don't get a huge amount of apple. It was a pretty good harvest. We had quite a good weather during the summer. It wasn't that hot as 2015. That was a very warm year for the region where we are. We are almost on a lake region, so it does get warm in the summertime, and it's a little bit humid, but the season is not very long. So was quite balanced in weather 2016, and we had a good crop as well. The apples, we had plenty of apples for our ciders, and also we picked a little bit earlier than before. Normally we were starting to pick on March, like the second or third week of March, and keep on harvesting until mid-April. And this year we made it almost all into March. So we were looking a little bit into some extra freshness and a little bit of more acidity in our ciders. So I think it was a good call to start a little bit earlier as well.
Are you picking all the apples and pressing, or do any of the apples get saved?
Yes. Normally we do like pick the apples and store them for maybe a couple of days until we have enough to press, but we don't store for longer periods. And normally we press and process everything during March, and after April is fermentations, and from May we start
conditioning or blending?
More the maturation process in tanks.
Oh, okay.
We store them in stainless steel tanks, and after normally the last week I was in the south starting to see how the blend we will do it. We start we do a little bit of fining with bentonite, and after in three more weeks we will blend, and probably before the end of September we will do the bottle conditioning. Normally that's the whole process that we do.
Can you repeat that? You do some fining, and I couldn't hear that word.
Yeah, it's just a little bit to like help the settling and have a better foam when we do the bottle conditioning. We use a little bit of bentonite.
Oh, bentonite, yes. So you're not doing any filtering of the cider at all?
No.
Okay.
No, we work pretty naturally. We are not a strictly natural cider. We do use a little bit of sulfites and a bit of selected yeast for our fermentations, but all the rest is pretty natural. The apples are very they are organic. They're not certified, but they're very, very natural. They haven't had any additions in the orchards in a very long time, and so we don't filter, and after we just blend and do the bottle conditioning. That we do add a little bit of sugar for that.
Okay. I feel like
just for foam.
Right. I feel like I have a zillion questions for you. I'm just so excited to hear about cider in Chile, because we really haven't heard too much about that. And I was wondering, Are there many folks making cider? Is this, I mean, we think of Chile and we think of wine. I know that there's apples there, but is this unique that you're finding? Are people saying, what's cider?
It's slowly starting to appear like the as a possible business, and you also can see a few examples of bottles in the local market. But we are not a big consumer country in terms of cider. Cider is not popular as it's starting to be in the U.S. or as it you can say England or Australia. And I've seen a couple of people getting into cider production in the last couple of years, and there is some interest. We're starting to group with a bunch of other producers from all over the country to start making a cider producers association, and start doing other types of activities to enhance the cider as a drink in Chile and promote all the good stuff. It's just starting to form, and we had a couple of meetings, but I think in the next couple of years we will see every year more people getting into and getting interested, because as you said, there are a lot of apple productions, and also there is a lot of kind of wild orchards, and like the apples that we're working with in the south, you can see there is a big potential to use that and make wonderful ciders.
Well, I was looking at some of the apple varieties in Chile, and I was also looking at what I could find out about with your particular cider, and I didn't quite recognize some of these apples. And from what I understand, many of the trees were brought over by Europeans many, many years ago now. And some of the names are kind of made up or local names, such as, I was wondering about the Roja Chica. Can you tell us about that apple?
Yeah, we were using a mix of varieties for our cider. And as you said, in the south of Chile, with most of the varieties that I'm interested to use, because we've experimented with some more like commercial, like Granny Smith or Pink Lady, or and I really don't like very much what you get as a cider. So that's why we started a project down south, and we're using these old orchards that they can deliver different characteristics to what we're doing. So there is a not very much information on how the varieties actually got there, if they were brought from where, in if they were coming from Germany or from France, but like between 150 and 100 years ago, the Chilean government gave some land to European settlers, and one of the conditions it was that they had to plant an apple or fruit orchard. So you can see in the like more rural landscapes a lot of old orchards that you find apple trees, old cherry trees, old even prunes and other plums, and so that's what we can find there. But there is not a very very focused selection on the names or the varieties or how they were reproduced. So that's what we have in our plans. As a company, we want to investigate where our material is coming from, and we're starting to make our own selections and reproduce them and plant them in our orchard that we're forming in the farm. but it's very mixed up, and you can find a lot of different things, and sometimes they will be identified by the local growers that they heard it from their fathers and grandfathers, and some of the others they will be just without any name, like the one you mentioned that is Roja Chica. So it's a very tiny red apple that is very tannic. It has a lot of like tannins and polyphenols, so it's very interesting for blending and use it in a small proportion, because it gives you a nice color, a nice like mouthfeel, like structure, and you can feel that in the cider after.
That's so fascinating. And I also read that you have some, perhaps making some perry too. You have some pear trees.
Well, we've been also doing some trials. There are some very old, rare apple trees that they have a very odd way of ripening. Sometimes they will just ripen on the tree, and once they fell down, they're completely overripe and you can't use them. So it has been hard for us to find the right berries to do a nice berry or poire, and but it's in also our projects. I personally love the best things that come from Normandy, of poire and some British berries, and it's definitely something that we have in our wish lists or things to do, but has been hard, and we want to keep it like very as a like territorial project based on the territory, and until we can't really have the fruit, we won't force it.
Now, you mentioned Normandy, and from what I understand, that's a little bit of the style that you're producing your cider in, that Normandy style. What is your background, Diego? I also read that you wrote a thesis on Chilean cider, which I'm also really curious about too. So maybe you could let myself and the rest of Ciderville know a little bit about your background, because it seems pretty involved in the cider community. This is something that is not new to you.
Yeah, well, I study winemaking, actually. My profession is, and I work as well for Viña Garcés Silva in Chile, when we produce wine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I started with the cider subject and the interest like around 2008. I discovered what cider was in England, visiting my sister that was living there at that time. And well, it was very interesting. I did the link with what we had in Chile with the apples. My family, my grandfather that I didn't meet, he used to do a barrel of cider and keep it in the underground for a couple of months, and they will open it up in springtime. So there is a cider tradition that got lost in some point in the south, and I suddenly understood that I was doing winemaking and linked that to the tradition of the family and the south of Chile, and started investigating that. And in the university, I did a couple of things with cider, and then I wrote my thesis that brought me up to the UK to find some information that I really couldn't find here. There wasn't much information about of the cider production, the process, and it's not a really like scientific thesis, but it's more like a compilation of all different process and different techniques, and what's the world cider industry at that moment. That was like 2010.
It's just starting to really bubble over at that point, certainly worldwide and in the U.S. You said your grandfather put it in the cellar. Is there a lot of cellaring, like basements, you know, like underneath a home, or is it a stone building? And maybe we need to kind of talk a little bit about where you are in the region. I know that you're in southern Chile, and Chile is like a really long, long country. It's about what, like, well, compared to the U.S., it's almost as wide as the U.S., about 26,000 plus miles or 4,300 kilometers. So in the region that you are you, do you have to have a lot of refrigeration to cellar the cider? How is that set up?
Now there is not very much basements. It's somehow we didn't get a lot of basement construction here in Chile. I do find them great, and I really like what the temperature conditions that basements give you. But now we have a cellar that we built with more wood than anything, and the region down there, we are 500 miles more or less south, so it's pretty down south, and the weather changes a lot here in the city center in Santiago. In the middle of the country, it's quite dry, quite Mediterranean. It's almost like where the desert ends, the Mediterranean climate starts. But in the south, it's very wet. It rains like 6 times more than what we have here. And there is a lot of forests. And it's a little bit like lake country. There are a lot of big lakes around in the area. And also quite a few big volcanoes. It's a very, very beautiful place, quite touristic. You have hot springs, and people go a lot there in the summertime, especially. Now also for skiing, and but in the summer it's packed. Our facility is a cellar that we built, and normally we use the winter cold to keep our cellars like cool, and now the ciders are very, very cold, like 5 to 6 degrees. And normally we try to bottle the ciders before the start of spring, so with the warming up temperatures we can have a better bottled conditioning that needs a little bit of warmer temperatures to start back again fermenting. And after we keep them in a building that has a good insulation, and then after the summer they get shipped or we start selling.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about that lake region in the town of Villarrica?
Yeah, Villarrica.
Villarrica. And that's about, I'm going to say, about 746 kilometers south of Santiago.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And that is where the cider's being made. Now, you mentioned it was a tourist area, and I know that there's an active volcano right, well, pretty close by. I guess it started becoming pretty active in 2015. What is it like to be living near a volcano? I think I want to ask that first. That's kind of active like that. Is that what people are just used to?
Yeah, nobody comments about it. Like, really, I don't personally live in the area. I've spent a lot of time of my life in the south, but now I'm living a little bit north, and I go down every month to see the ciders and everything. But people really, it's active, and it has never exploded like a huge volcano, and you can see every night on the cone on the top part like a little bit of light coming out of the volcano. It's pretty like mystical. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of like original stories or like an indigenous people. Mm-hmm. from the place that they say that a spirit lives inside the volcano, and around it's completely the landscape is completely formed by the volcano. The lake was an old glacier area, and there are a few like lava streams where you can go, and there is only rocks, beautiful rocks, by the way. But we're used to as a country on living with volcanoes and also with the earthquakes. It's part of our culture, and also probably it's part of like how our tradition evolves during time. You know, we cannot really do much if the volcano explodes after apart from running.
True.
Of course.
True.
But such a beautiful place that of course you would love to live there, you know.
Yeah, I could only imagine. And what a beautiful image of the mystical volcano. When I hear that and I think about the soil where in the region that the apples are growing, it makes me think a little bit about the Pacific Northwest in the United States, where, well, not so long ago, they had that volcano, Mount St. Helens, and that did throw out quite a bit of dust in the area. So there's that very specific soil to that region. And what I'm hearing from you, and please correct me if I'm going off the wrong way, but I think that the apples that you have primarily are pretty high in acid and in sugar. Is that true? And they're primarily culinary apples too.
Well, there's a mix of everything. I wouldn't say all of the apples that are high in acids. Some of them are more like flat. And it's really variable on the variety, and the soils around they are where the apple orchards are. They're pretty volcanic. There is a type of soil that is formed by volcanic ash after 100 or years of evolution, and they're quite acidic soils, and they can also get a lot of water. They are really permeable soils, and they are quite fertile for agriculture process.
I wonder about the nutrient level in those apples. So it's pretty high, the nutrients is what you're finding.
I think not so much, because normally the orchards, the soil, it is fertile itself, but as the apple trees are so old, and they haven't had any extra or artificial nutrients in a long time. Normally, I started to see that the nutrient level and the fermentations, they ask for a little bit of nutrition to get into the good profile, the good aromatic profile. So I can say that the apple, they are pretty poor in nutrient level, but quite full flavor as well.
When you're making the cider, do you make the cider as a blend, or are you doing a single variety of an apple and then blending afterwards?
No, more or less what we do is from each of the producers we work with, we try and select the more homogeneous part of an orchard. Sometimes we do blend apples from one orchard, but we're mainly doing like orchard selections, and in that probably there is a dominant apple in that blend. And that's why we chose the producer to work with. But after we have like six or seven different components to blend, and each of one, they will represent one or one producer at least.
I have two questions here. What's the current quantity that you're making, and is that increasing from year to year? Are you seeing a big increase from like 2015 to looking forward to 2017?
Yeah, this year we made like 7,000 bottles. They're not bottled yet, but that's like what we calculate we will have after blending. And yeah, we've been increasing. We started from a very, very tiny production. Like the first year we did almost, was a little bit bigger than a trial, but it was 3,000 half-liter bottles. And now we're doing 750 ml, so it's bigger bottles. And already almost in 7,000 bottles. And the idea is to, we want to grow at least to be able to produce around 24,000 bottles. That is around 2,000 cases of 12 bottles. That's our like midterm goal to arrive. But we want to do it quite slowly and like keep focused on doing as quality as possible, as the cider is bottled condition, and we do it with the traditional method of sparkling wines. It's a very laborious process because after the fermentation, you have the aging in stainless steel for a couple of months, and then bottling. And then we have to do all the what's called remouage and riddling of the ciders to remove all the yeast and everything that like formed into the bottle with the second fermentation. So that takes a lot of energy and it's very laborious.
For the listeners who don't know that process, can you explain a little bit what that looks like?
Yeah, the traditional method or Champenoise method that comes from the region of Champagne in France, basically you do a second fermentation after you do, well, first you do a base, either cider or wine, and after you add a little bit of sugar to the mix and a little bit of yeast, and then you bottle that, and the second fermentation with the new sugar and the new yeast that you added, it ferments inside the bottle and it stores all the carbonation, and after it gives some, produces a little bit of settling and all the yeasts that fermented inside the bottle, you have to remove them, and for that you put the bottles upside down, so all the yeast they go to the bottleneck, and then with a process that combines freezing at minus 20 degrees Celsius the bottleneck and quickly opening it and then retopping and recapping, you have a very clear cider but with natural carbonation inside.
Diego and his cousin Matisse Narwald and one other person complete the manual remage of the cider. Cider makers need a clear head and steady hands, much like a beekeeper going into a hive to find the queen. Certainly, each step in the process of fermentation will impact the aroma of the finished cider. The process of disgorgement, the moment after the remage when all the yeast that is at the neck of the bottle is removed, as Diego mentioned, will play a significant role in the aroma of the cider. Imagine yourself holding a bottle of cider over minus 27 degrees Celsius. That equals minus 16 degrees Fahrenheit, just long enough to freeze the neck of the bottle that contains all the yeast sediment, then releasing the cap and watching the frozen plug of what I lovingly call the schmutz seep out of the bottle. Having assisted in this process myself, I found it extremely exhilarating and a little bit nerve-wracking. Once disgorgement takes place, a precise amount of sugar can be added or not. The bottle is then recapped, and the finished cider is clear, bright, and will have bubbles. I next ask Diego about the Chilean government's regulation of cider. Does the government oversee the cider production at all in the country, as it would perhaps with wine? Or is that something that you're finding the government's kind of catching up to, the fact that cider is being made in Chile?
No, it's part of the like legal regulation of the alcohol production. So it's listed on the wine. It's like the alcohol law, and there is a lot of like practices that are allowed and some others that are not, as you could find in wine. It's very like the law is a little bit more wine driven, has some limitations coming from the wine world that I don't agree completely, but yes, we're part of the system that regulates the wine and the cider alcohol productions, and we get like samples tested and everything, but it's more like a voluntary thing. You need to be signed if you want to like have a very like domestic or home like hobby operation. Probably you can do it without being listed in the agency.
Right. Now, in the U.S., there is a cap on the ABV, or alcohol by volume, can be for cider. And then it starts getting taxed as a wine if it goes higher than that. And that's going to be 8.5%. I was wondering, is that true for where you're making cider? Is there a cap? And then if it goes higher, right now I think your cider is around 7.5%. Can you make it higher and be at the same tax rate? At this point in our conversation, Diego and I were getting disconnected, and I couldn't quite hear what he was saying. So I asked him once again to clarify, in Chile, is the cutoff 8% for the amount of alcohol by volume, or ABV, that the Chilean government allows one to make and still call it cider? And to go higher than that, it gets changed and must be called something else or in the category of wine. And he says,
yeah, that's the maximum. But I think it should be a little bit higher. I think there are apple varieties, especially in the south, that probably they are longer there than when the law was created, that they can easily get up to that level. So it should be a little bit higher. Yeah, normally worldwide the like upper limit is 8.5.
Right.
I think in the US, in Canada, in the UK, like cider producing countries have 8.5 as a limit.
It sounds like you are at the touchstone of what could be quite a market for cider in your country, because it is renowned for growing fruit and exporting that. Hearing you say that there's all these old apple trees, I know that the folks listening out in Ciderville, you know, they're probably getting kind of thirsty even at the thought of that. It is a really amazing point to be where you are currently. I imagine that association you're talking about, is that based right now? Are you finding most of the folks there based in the south part of the country who are working on cider, or is it up and down the coast?
Well, it's everywhere. It's people really coming from a big area on producing ciders with like different styles, different like market points, and also using a big range of apples from more culinary orchards and other really all sort of things, from Granny Smith to like rustic apples. So we're still like trying to know each other and really try to find a big objective, a collective objective. So, but I think it will become something serious, definitely.
And if I was in Santiago, would I be able to find your cider, or would I have to go to the town that it's being made at? And I don't think you have a tasting room there, right?
No, we don't have a tasting room at the moment, but we do receive any people that they get over there. It's like a very touristic place, and we're not into the touristic routes, but like if anyone wants to go and contact us and by our web page and would like to see around a little bit and show them, we're quite happy to show them. But if you're in Santiago, nowadays we are a little bit sold out on our productions. We do have a little stock that we have in a couple of restaurants and a couple of stores, but it's not very, like, it changes a little bit and it's rotating every like week almost.
And I just wanted to just touch upon one more thing for any listener who might be in on this chat and, you know, they are headed to Santiago. Is there a restaurant you'd recommend or a store you'd recommend to be finding your cider in on the top of your head, or is that a hard one to name?
Yeah, I wouldn't really like mention or would like to, because we are about to really get sold out with the 2015 vintage. So and it takes it will be a couple of months without much stock until we have the 2016 vintage that is looking very promising, but probably it's easier if they can contact us by our web page and we can try and deliver it in Santiago. We have a like direct delivery through our web page, and definitely you will see it around the US. It's being imported there by Brazos Wine Imports that they distribute nationally, and we've been working with them since 2013. We're very happy with being able to also have the cider in the U.S.
Yes, that's really exciting. Well, I'd like to thank you so much. I was wondering, how do you say salut in Chile, if you're going to be cheering someone, do you say cheers, or is there a particular way that you salute with cider?
No, it's like salud, like as you say, it's with D at the end, and it's what we say to make any type of toast or cheers.
Oh, wonderful. And you do call it cider. You just spell it C-I-D-E-R, as we would in the U.S.
Yeah, in Spanish, normally we call it sidra, but also some people call it sidra with C. We do spell it with S.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Diego, thank you so much for taking time. I hope the rest of your winter is smooth sailing and that this cider that is going to be shipped off, I imagine, in the coming spring. Your spring is coming as we're going into fall, that it's a fruitful year for you. I really appreciate your time here today.
No, thank you very much, Ria, for the opportunity on showing to all the cider folks what we're doing down here, and we hope we can deliver good quality cider for many more years, and I hope if you find it around, you can grab a bottle and toast to the cider. That's what at the end brings us all around.
Gracias, Diego. Thank you so much for spending time telling your story of what is taking place in Chile. I think we'll be hearing a lot more about Quebrada de Chacao in Vicari, Chile, in the next couple of years, no doubt, as you continue to increase production and your family, I wish them all the best and good and fruitful future for you all. Pretty cool stuff. Chile is the land of the Andes Mountains. It is a huge coastal area, as I mentioned. I mean, the coastline is immense. It is on the western side of South America, and those folks really have a lot going down there. I mean, I love the mountains. I love the water. I love the cider. I love the wine. And I do love Spanish when I can figure it out. Oh my goodness. My problem is that I took French in high school. And when I've been down into Latin America, and I'm having a little bit of cider or tequila, and I start putting when I'm supposed to be saying si, I'm saying oui. Oh, too much stuff going in. I call that a bit of tornado brain, but there you have it. Anyways, we do our best, and I'm really excited getting back to topic about Chile. Cool stuff, right? Alrighty now, a bit more to catch up on here. In a couple days, I'll be down in New York City for the Cider Fest. That's a cookout, New York City, and it takes place alongside the East River. It's a pretty neat event. This is a second annual year that this is taking place. There are going to be over 30 cider makers pouring. The timing is from 4:30 to 8:30, so it's a single session of cider and food. And I am in heaven thinking about that. I mean, dang, cider should always be consumed, in my mind, with a wee bit of food, the perfect little pairing there. It really brings out the essence of the cider and truly matches well with any food possible. And there's going to be some of our favorite ciders, some that have already been on this episode. I say favorite ciders, I mean, truthfully, any cider that's in my glass is typically my favorite cider. I want to just say more people and the connection with the cideries who have taken the time to chat with us here in Ciderville. There'll be Virtue Cider from the great state of Michigan. That is a big mecca center for ciders. And that will be Virtue Cider, I see, right now. I guess this list could change, but we did speak already to Gregory Hall, and that was episode number 22. I see that Austin East Ciders, which is available in New York, it is a Texas cidery, which is just ramping up its production. And we had Aaron Anderson on in episode number 27 from Austin East Ciders. We also spoke with Danielle Von Schreiner from Big Apple Hard Cider. That's New York City's hard cidery, an amazing woman. And I really had a lot of fun speaking to Danielle this past June when I attended Pour the Core. She is on episode number 35. So if you're heading down, you haven't listened to that, and you're heading to that fest or wherever your travels take you this weekend, do check out those episodes. And if you see me walking around at this Cider Fest in New York City, I'll be wearing a yellow shirt. It'll say Podcaster and Cider Chat. Come on up and say, hey, I'll have my little recorder. I'm going to be podcasting it up and definitely having a glass of cider. So look forward to that and hopefully meeting you there too. And you could follow along on my fun time this weekend via Twitter at Cider Chat. And if you haven't become a patron of Cider Chat, please do. Cider Chat has its own Patreon page where folks can, for $1 a month, $3, $5 a month, help keep this chat thriving so we can continue to bring amazing cider makers and folks, maybe just like yourself, coming on and getting to tell cider's story and sharing your wealth of info for all. You could join the ranks of the commercial cidery Current Cider in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. I spoke with Joe Getz, that was episode 14. And Joe, like other commercial cider makers, for the mere cost of 2 bottles of cider per month, can help keep this chat going forward and promoting cider. And if you're not a commercial cider maker, no worries. There is lots of options to support this chat. And in return, you could get a Cider Chat baseball cap, a cider t-shirt. I have cider refrigerator magnets and so much more, including behind-the-scenes looks and connections with Ciderville. that aren't sent out to the general world, such as the 10 cider travel hacks that I wrote specifically for you. Lots of fun there. Please check it out at Cider Chat Patreon. Wow, so much going on. A great chat coming up next week, so stay tuned for that. I'll keep you on the edge of your seat with your glass, and may you enjoy your weekend wherever it takes you in the meanwhile. Step lightly in the orchard, folks, and enjoy the cider. This is Aria Wincaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.